Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Justin, who is here to speak with us about his experience of participating in Reflective Listening Buddies. Welcome, Justin.
Hey, Jen. Can you hear me okay?
Can hear you perfectly.
Perfect. Yeah.
So, as a new quarter of Reflective Listening Buddies approaches, it's always nice to get to hear directly from someone who has participated. So thank you for being with us this afternoon to talk about that. And, you know, maybe you could start us off by saying, what in particular about this practice opportunity would you say has had an impact on the practice for you, on your practice?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I was doing a little recording and listening before this interview, and to me, what was coming up was I see Reflective Listening Buddies call as kind of the gateway to communication.
Oh, well put. Mm-hmm. The gateway to communication.
Yeah, which is a big topic.
It is a big topic. Yeah,
and it's a big
place. As per the book that came out last year.
Yeah, and that was what's coming up with me is because the first retreat I did was the New Year's retreat last New Year's, and it was about communication. And at the time, I was communication. What's kind of the big deal here? You know, I don't even, you know. But it was just, it wasn't even really seen.
A whole retreat on it. I mean, really, come on.
Yeah,
we all know how to communicate, right? Just say stuff and listen.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that was exactly the kind of ego process. And then, and then at that retreat, you know, we practiced that skill of reflective listening, and it was just like a light bulb. A light bulb turned on, you know, where you're moving out, and then, you know, reflective listening buddy being that practice, you know, you're moving out of being that personality when you're in communication with other people.
Oh, exactly so. Exactly so. So when you employ that tool of reflecting, you're moving out of personality. We might say you're stepping back out of whatever was going on with me, you know, whatever it is. And by just moving into using reflective listening, you're taking that step back.
Yeah, and it's just such a practical tool to have in life, you know, whether it's on a call like this with Sangha or whether it's, you know, with outside of Sangha, which is probably how a lot of people kind of spend our lives, and being in work conversations or being in family conversations or difficult conversations or maybe not so difficult conversations, but just to have that in your tool bag to be able to reflect what someone else is saying is such like a, it's one of the best tools in the tool bag that I've learned from, you know, being part of the Sangha.
So it sounds like, in other words, you really find that skill of reflective listening assists you all over the place, right? Not just in practice, but in your everyday relationships, at your job, with your family, with friends, in all kinds of situations, that feels like a really powerful tool to practice everywhere.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. And it's just something that I can draw on when needed, because, you know, ego would, of course, want you to say, okay, so all you can do is reflect from here on out, right? You can never say anything. You can only reflect what other people are saying, is how ego would frame it. But, of course, that's not what we do in mm-hmm. life. But, you know, you could just do it at any point. If you're feeling stuck, if you're not feeling stuck, reflecting is always, it's always a good idea, right? You're not really going to go wrong or make things worse when you kind of turn to that reflection as a tool.
Yeah, it's so true. Because one of the things, I mean, I just love what you started off with in terms of, you know, how important communication is. And at the root, I mean, I remember Sherry talking for years before writing the communication book saying, I got to write this book. And I think that's what she starts off with in the intro. As she and Ashwini wrote it, realizing that so much of suffering happens in communication, around communication, as a result of communication. And so that really makes reflective listening, especially the listening part and the, you know, and both the reflecting and the listening part, key to being able to take that step back that you're talking about. And Reflective Listening Buddies is a program that allows us to practice doing that in sort of, we could say, a low stakes situation.
Yeah, that's such a great point, Jen. And it really provides that structure to the program, and maybe just super briefly, if anyone's not familiar with it, you're
Please.
Should I lay it out? Yeah, okay. You're
yeah,
paired with a buddy for the quarter, and you and your buddy do once a week. You do a 30-minute call, and one person's the speaker, so they talk about what's going on with them, what they're seeing. And another person is just merely reflecting what that other person's saying. So they're not adding their, you know, two cents, or, you know, even asking, they're not asking questions. They're not, you know, they're mm-hmm. literally trying to be that mirror and reflecting what that other person's saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So, and both people have a chance to play both roles, which is brilliant, of course, because again, it's, a, you know, both things are important, right? To be able to talk about what you're seeing and process that and be heard. And also to practice being the person who's listening and reflecting back as best we can.
Yeah, exactly. And as you were saying that, you know, I hadn't really kind of looked at, I looked a lot at like the reflecting process, like, you know, when someone else is talking, being able to listen. But really that speaking process is a big part of the call. And just being able to say, you know, in this very structured environment, you know, having a place where you could go to with whatever's going on, you know, with a Sangha member who's not going to add any comments or anything like that, they're just merely going to reflect you, is, I mean, it's really big, right? And it's part of that communication piece.
It really is, and it's rare, isn't it? It's rare that even the people in our lives who love us like crazy and have the best of intentions, it's rare that someone has the ability to just simply listen to us and reflect.
Yeah, it is rare to find that, right? Not to find the personality. And I noticed that as I kind of increased my recording and listening practice and that deepened, you know, the reflective listening buddy calls became much more, I don't know, natural or fluid or deeper, especially that speaking part, because and a lot of people talk about this, but you know, there's a way in which ego has you rehearsing what you're going to say to your reflective listening buddy call, and it needs to be insightful and it needs to be X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like the practice of just speaking to my recorder translates to the reflective listening buddy and vice versa, because I mean, what is your buddy but kind of like a recorder, right? And what is your recorder but your buddy? Like, the, you know.
Yeah. That's perfect. And you know, something else you just said, Justin, was just so key, is that, of course, whatever things happen for us, the way we're caused to suffer is going to show up in reflective listening buddies as well. So if I have a thing about like, oh, I got to be brilliant, I got to say something really good, I got to rehearse this, I'm going to see that in my reflective listening buddies practice. And conversely, if I have a thing about like, oh, I got to reflect perfectly, I got to do this right, you know, I'm going to see that too. All of those things are going to come up. And there are support calls throughout the quarter where people can get on as a group, you know, so, I mean, however many people, you know, of us get on those support calls and talk about what goes on for them around their practice of reflective listening buddies. It's like a group. And so it's so brilliant because it's a really, the program really encompasses all sides of it.
Yeah, and those support calls are just, they're so wonderful. I mean, people talk about their processes. They can also ask, you know, questions. What, you know, what can I do if this comes? And they get guidance with that. And there's just such a comfort in, I mean, it's the kind of the power of Sangha, hearing other people, oh, you hear, you know, you hear ego saying, like, you got to reflect this perfect. You know, you can't miss a word. Like, okay, so you're going through that process also. You know, what are you seeing about that? Okay, that's what I'm seeing about it, or maybe I'll try to work with that. So those group calls, I'm glad you brought those up, because those are always a joy to get together, like you were saying, like a group, right? You have your buddy,
exactly.
But it's not just you and your buddy. It's you know, there's a group, right? And it's part of a bigger group, yeah.
Yeah, and exactly what you said, Justin, that it's always my experience when I'm on calls like that I don't think there's anything anyone ever says that I think, huh, I don't really know that experience. You know, everything is like, yep, me too. Oh, me too. Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that's such a good reality check for us, because what it makes us realize is, you know, I'm not on those reflective listening buddy calls to be the perfect reflector or to be the person who comes with the brilliant thing to talk about. I'm on there for all the reasons you said, that I realize that, you know, a lot of suffering happens around communication. I realize that it's a great, you know, I want to have a place in my week where I can just stop and talk about whatever's going on with me, a place where I can practice listening and taking that step back out of the personality, as you were talking about, and reflecting. That's why I'm doing it. It's all practice.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not doing it to be the perfect communicator. What, you know, when I do this for 4 years, then that's when I'm really going to be able to dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. It's all practice. And just when you were just saying that, you know, having that rock kind of, you know, that's your commitment. It's scheduled once a week. You know, someone's on the other line, so you're not gonna miss it, right? Because it's easy to blow it off if, oh, recording and listening. You know, okay, I can do that later. No biggie.
I'm too tired.
It's like, yeah, you're too tired, I'll do that or whatever. But, like, no, you have someone else there holding you accountable and expecting your call, so you're not going to miss that. So even if it's begrudgingly, you know, you're going to get on those calls. And it's always my experience that, okay, so this is where I am. And, you get reflected, or you start with your buddy, and that gets you here. And, yeah, it's just such a great foundation.
And isn't that brilliant? That's another thing you hear people talk about on the calls, the support calls of, I mean, you know, invariably, ego throws up a storm. I don't want to. It's too hard. I'm too busy, whatever. But as you say, okay, well, my buddy's waiting for me, so I'm going to do it. And then invariably, we get on those calls and feel like, wow, so that was the best half hour of my day. I'm so glad I did that. You know, I'm disidentified. I feel, you know, all those things that happened because we did show up.
Yeah, exactly. And every single call and every single buddy just takes on such a new flavor. I mean, I've looked at, you know, you bring up anything, you know, where you're suffering, where you're doing well, or just what's going on now. Like, hey, I'm looking outside at a tree. Or if there's like a moment of silence, I've been on calls where there's just silence, and that's fine too. You just, you don't know what's going to happen because, it's arising in the moment, right?
Exactly. And, you know, the other thing as we're talking, Justin, that I'm reminded of is that, you know, at some point, each of us was brand new to reflective listening, and there may be people out there who haven't done this before. And so, at least for me, it felt like, oh, I don't know how to do that. That's too scary. And, you know, I'm not going to take that on. But rest assured that one of the things that happens at the beginning of each quarter is that there are training calls. So not just support calls, but training calls, where we actually train in how to do reflective listening. And then, as we say, for the remainder of the quarter, we're all practicing doing reflective listening, right? It's not like we're expected to be perfect at that point. So there is training that happens at the start of the quarter.
Yeah, thanks for adding that. Yeah.
Well, Justin, thank you so much for being with us this afternoon to talk about your experience.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's a joy, and it's a real foundational piece of practice, but that expands out to real life. I mean, real life implications, you know, in every facet is kind of what I'll leave it with.
Yeah, that's really good. It's got both of those components. It's so foundational, and it has such a ripple effect throughout in a very practical way, as you talked about this afternoon.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much, Jen.
Thanks, Justin. Take good care. Good night.
Good night.
And we'll turn it over to you and Ashwini, Michael.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen. And thank you, Justin. Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air. And good afternoon, Ashwini.
Hey, Michael.
Hi. I enjoyed that conversation, and especially the part about being a beginner and bringing beginner's mind to it. And it seems like in a lot of life, you know, being a beginner is not a good thing, but in practice, that's kind of what we're going for.
Yeah, absolutely. My favorite part of the conversation was the don't suffer, communicate part. And then saying that most of suffering happens around communication, or most of suffering happens because of miscommunication, right? And that's the lovely part of reflective listening, because when we're present, you can't suffer. And when you're present, ego is not interfering with communication, which is what both reflecting and listening do for us primarily, right? It's not just a skill of expression. It's also such a skill of presence.
Yes. And don't forget the lack of communication. I'm well aware of that one, too.
Yes.
Many ways to go wrong. And with presence, possibility of sidestepping those potholes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Lovely.
It's the best way to facilitate is to reflect.
Yes.
It's so versatile.
Yes, very versatile. Yes, and I'm excited to join the next quarter that's coming right up. And speaking of which, I have an announcement about that.
Great.
Reflective Listening Buddies is one of our most popular programs for a reason. There is no other support quite like it for practicing presence, with participants required to show up for themselves and another every week for 30 minutes, as we just heard from Justin and Jen. And a new quarter starts April 15th. And is conditioning talking you out of a commitment that you really want to keep? If so, and if you would like some support, sign up for the Keeping Commitments Buddy Program beginning April 15th. Participants will be paired with a buddy for accountability and support during this kind and compassionate training. For those who want to access the wisdom, love, and compassion that is our authentic nature, our powerful recording and listening training course starts May 13th. This engaging 6-week course includes recording and listening exercises with time in class for processing your experience. And for these and all practice offerings, visit livingcompassion.org. Okay, Ashwini, I think we are ready to get started here.
Excellent.
All right. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Emily from Seattle.
Hi, Emily.
Hey, Emily.
Hi. Well, I had a conversation with Sherry this morning about pressure and preparation, and I decided I would try calling into the show without any preparation and see how that went.
Following the guidance, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess in a way I was preparing because I knew I was going to talk about this, but I just was trying to keep out of preparing mind, which was kind of impossible because it kept coming back. But I would catch myself preparing and planning, and I would just try to redirect to okay, no thinking, and stay in that.
So, Emily, is it helpful for you to look at that from the perspective of so what you said was I was trying not to prepare, but that was impossible. To translate that into, well, preparing and planning are thinking, right? It's referencing conditioned mind. So what you're actually saying is, well, I was watching the attention go to conditioned mind, which is preparing and planning, and redirecting the attention. So it's not as if I prepare and plan. It's just simply that the mind does that, and the attention can either be on that process or it cannot be on the process. And I would project that what we're letting go of, or what Sherry was giving you guidance about this morning, is simply to drop the pressure, right? Pressure is the same thing. That it's a conversation in conditioned mind that's telling you that you've got to be a certain way when you say something, and therefore, in order to be a certain way, you've got to think about how you want to be and what you want to say. And so that it's actually all the same process.
The pressure is the same process as the preparing and planning.
And the planning. All the P's happen in conditioned mind, right?
What was the last P you said?
Planning, preparation, and performance. And pressure. Oh. All the P's. They're all in the conversation, right?
Yeah. So, I I do prepare, like there's homework in the class, in the morning call, and so I do want to do it. And
yeah, well, that's not preparation though, right?
It's not.
That's practice. Another P, different sort of P. So there's a way in which when you're doing the assignment, you show up, there's a question that's asked, and something drops in, or you're looking to your experience in order to answer the question. That's not planning or preparation. That's simply practicing presence. Another P. Yeah, practicing presence.
Well, I might take some notes about it so that I know what I'm going to say on the call. Is that preparation?
Well, I would ask you that, right? Given the light of what we're looking at, what we're referring to as the suffering process that happens in conditioned minds, we label preparing or planning or performance or pressure, right? Because the conversation is about those things. It goes something like, okay, well, maybe you need to think about this before you get on the call, or make sure you don't, or some sensation that feels like, wow, that what you need to say has to be insightful or whatever else, right? So if we're defining all of that as a conversation, then taking notes about what you're seeing is not the same process.
Mm-hmm. Well,
But what you're doing right now, right, which is that planning or isn't that preparation, is the same process, right? It's looking to the conditioned mind about what it is rather than looking to your experience about what it is. Because when you're taking notes, if your attention is on the conversation, you might feel pressured. But if you're taking notes and your attention's not on the conversation, then you don't feel pressured.
Yeah. Well, I think I know the experience. When I was practicing with it today, I could sense that the conditioned mind would start up with the okay. Like, it might come from an insight or something that I was excited about, but that conditioned mind would take it and start forming a plan. And it felt like a misery place. Mm-hmm. And then I would...
It does, doesn't it? Yeah.
It does, yeah. And then I would say, okay, no thinking. And then I felt like I could get back to that inspiration that was just, okay, I'm going to try to call without preparation. And that felt like freedom.
Yes. And the reason I keep reframing this, right, Emily, is because it's not, I plan a lot and now I'm not going to plan, right? It's not that. What you're doing is very different. So the conversation starts up, oh, I should do this and I should do that. You notice, so your attention is now on awareness because you're noticing that thought process is happening. And what drops in is, okay, what's my redirect? What am I redirecting the attention to? My intention, which is I don't want to be attending to conditioned mind, and so I'm going to be here. So it's not that you're not planning. It's not that you're not feeling pressured. It's not that you're not performing. It's not the opposite of what conditioned mind is telling you to do in conditioned mind. It's actually getting out of conditioned mind and being here. So if we believe what it's saying or we identify with what it's saying, then we're miserable.
Yeah. Well, I feel like what conditioned mind is doing to me right now is just like I got on this call, now it's going to get me like not being able to pay attention.
Right.
Getting
precisely.
My attention so right now.
Yes, and exactly. And now you're, how did you know that? Because you stepped into awareness and you're looking at it and you're telling me about it. You're not talking mm-hmm. from it, right? And that's precisely the difference.
And I think that's my fear of coming to a call unprepared or you know, you say, oh, just show up as you are, as yourself. And my fear is that I won't show up, but conditioning will show up.
Well, it's certainly your ego's fear is that you'll show up. So it's going to tell you. But so, again, we would do the same process, right, Emily? Who's talking? Who says I'm afraid of showing up on the call other than attention on that condition process and identification with a someone who's afraid? Because if you just showed, I mean, if awareness showed on the call, showed up on the call, that's not what's afraid, right?
Yeah, but I'm afraid that I would call with a, you know, open heart, being here, and then get taken over by ego, and I wouldn't be able to be, you know, I wouldn't be able to be there. I would right. Fear would be there, and embarrassment.
And so you would be facing, right. Well, that's really what, that's once again coming from that process, right? So the way we practice with that is you drop that, drop the conversation, and go to, okay, well, I'm going to choose to be here and see what happens. Because here is not afraid of embarrassment or fear. But believing and identifying with the I that is afraid of being embarrassed and humiliated and all of those things is still in the identification, right? So that's what I was pointing to, that we don't know. It's the hardest thing to know when we're identified because it feels so like me. So right now, you're expressing from the identification, which is afraid of showing up on the call and being embarrassed, rather than disidentifying from it and go, well, that's ego. Of course it doesn't want to show up on the call. Of course it thinks that authenticity on a call will embarrass itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well,
because right now we're having a wonderful discussion.
Yeah, I do sense ego here trying to interfere. And
yes, that it will always do. You could be guaranteed that it's going to show up and be and compellingly enough for it to have our attention, because that's what it does. So showing up and just, you know, being here and especially in the practice setting, right? Everybody knows that ego's there and that our attention's moving from ego to here, and this is what ego says. And so it's one of the most wonderful affirming things to do, because what ego is afraid of is being embarrassed, or it says it's going to be afraid of being embarrassed. But life is, we're only vulnerable to ego, right? And so you're here in the safest place you can be, talking about your process, where no one's going to judge you except that voice in your head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I figured this was a good practice place, and plus the call is recorded, so I can have another chance to listen.
That's exactly right. Yep. And go with the guidance, which is what you're practicing, and the guidance is drop it. Every time that voice comes up and says it's afraid, or it doesn't want you to do something, or you need to be prepared, or you need to plan, or you need to meet some performance standard, the guidance was really clear. Drop the conversation. In fact, I think in one of Sherry's previous interactions with you, her thing was, I love you, Emily. Right? Where you move from that place of judgment to that place of love. And then you're here.
Yeah.
Because love doesn't judge.
Really
love
good.
Doesn't condemn. Love doesn't does not pressure you to perform. It's unconditional.
Yeah. Well, that did feel really good to practice with that today, just that little bit. Felt really good. Thanks for the opportunity to
Well, thank you for taking it.
Okay.
Thanks, Emily.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Emily. And Ashwini, I'm just struck by the courage to listen to the guidance and follow the guidance and show up. It's extraordinary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, wonderful. And we have another caller here.
Great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Michael. Hi, Ashwini. It's Miriam. And I'm really excited to be talking to you again today.
Yes.
Oh, I did kind of prepare something because I was looking, and I think I'm just going to put it aside. And I was really interested by the conversation in the Good News update about reflective listing buddies, because it's something I've been interested in doing, but there's a great deal of fear and resistance around it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the fear of, oh, the poor person that's going to get that I won't be good at it, that I can't do it because I don't know how to do it because I've never done it. And it seems like a vicious circle and a process that comes back often.
Mm-hmm. So it's very familiar, right? That process of suffering, of saying, well, you don't know, you've never done it before, you should be an expert, so you can't do it, you can't try it because you're going to inflict yourself on some other poor human being who has to suffer from the lack of expertise.
Yeah, that's pretty much it, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's so believable when we hear it and so absurd when we put it out there like that, right?
Yes. But it's
really... it's like a deeply conditioned place of how we're taught to learn. I don't know something, and the first thing we hear when we're in school or something like that is, how could you not know? No one tells us. You're expected to know. And so it's that whole conditioned place of you've got to get the A in the class before you take the class.
Yes, and that just triggered some emotions, some of my things my father used to say. Oh, wow, it's powerful. But it's really, and it ties in with dread and avoidance, and looking at. What the assignment was last week, how do we get tripped up? I saw how dread and avoidance is a big issue. And how can I put it? I've been looking at like having a love affair with life instead of divorce from ego. And in looking at that, I saw how most of my relationships are like steeped in conflict. And so I dread and avoid the person I feel conflicted against. And either because I fear blowing up at them, or because I have blown up at them and I feel shame and their regret and their remorse. And it really is what someone was saying a while ago, how the communication and the miscommunication, I think it was you who was saying it, how there's so much suffering around miscommunication.
Well, and Miriam, you've got to get on a two-handed recording and process this and get signed up for the next quadrant of reflective listening studies. That's what you've got to do, right? Because
yes.
That's exactly what we're talking about. So what you're describing is a conditioned identification pattern, right? A process of suffering. You get on, we have the karma of extracting people who push our buttons, right? So
yes.
We get into interactions with them, And our conditioning gets stripped. We act out of our conditioning, and then we're made to feel bad. And we just keep doing that over and over and over again because there's no other way to do it. And so then we live in the fear of interactions and relationships because we think we're the kind of people who basically blow up or have to live in avoidance of relationships, right? It's a self-enforcing proposition. But it's a program. It's truly a program. You know, it's going to run every time you have an interaction with X part of person who triggers your conditioning. And so that's the whole thing about don't suffer, communicate, right? Which is we don't communicate. Our programs communicate. So how do you short circuit the programming is by being present. Well, that's very hard, right? And so when ego is rearing its ugly head in a program that has started to run, we've got to learn how to interrupt that program circuit, right? And so reflecting and listening are techniques which allow you to stay present. If you've got to repeat what someone is saying to you while you're interacting with them, attention can't be on the programming and the voices in your head causing the program to go ahead. And so that's the training skill that program offers is, What do I do in an interaction with another human being? Where do I have my attention? And how skillfully can I be present enough sufficiently not to let the program run the communication?
Because
that's why I reflect and listen and draw and clarify and facilitate. It just keeps ego out of that interaction through very specific skills.
Because I had a really interesting experience a few weeks ago with the two-handed recording. And it was content that's like literally 26 years old. And for the first time, I didn't just push it down. I took the recording and I let that young mom bringing her baby home from the hospital talk. And it was so liberating and so, but there's so much resistance around doing that and it's felt like I haven't really done that many two-handed recordings, but it feels like I'm always hearing this, oh, well, you can't do that and you can't do it. Well, I can, but it's just, the resistance is so, at times it's so subtle. And at times it's so obvious, but wow, and it's really, it really is a training to redirect attention. So I'm practicing a lot and doing
like
that.
yes, you are, and that's something to celebrate, absolutely. And part of what you're looking at, right, Miriam, is as we practice, we can identify the resistance as the program survival mechanism, right? Because if you signed on to the Reflective Listening Buddies program, something that has been maintaining itself for most of your life, it sounds like, is threatened, right? So it's going to make sure you never get those skills. It's the same thing with recording and listening, doing two-handed recordings, because if you get in touch with your experience and you process through it and you identify your emotions and you release them into unconditional love and acceptance, which is what was missing, then you'll be able to, you're going to interrupt another program, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because what we say in the communication book is, you know, reflecting, drawing out, listening, clarifying are tools we use for interactions. But before we interface with another person, we want to really get clear on what we want to communicate, or what's communicating is that age-old program and all of that emotion that hasn't gotten processed about that mom bringing that child home that gets transferred into every interaction, right? Because that's the energy of the emotion in the conditioned reaction. It's going to get out on everybody. That's what's running the communication. So we first get clear with ourselves about what's going on for us as one way of not letting the ego to take charge of the communication. So we support ourselves in all of these different ways in order to be present, to be here for life, rather than all of these programs that we carry around to be doing everything on our behalf, and then claiming to be us.
Because what I noticed in working with last week's assignment, how we get tripped up, is I noticed that I'm in the exchange or engaging in the conversation on what's happened in the past and not what's going on in the moment.
Yes.
And yes.
What a good observation.
That was really... really powerful to see.
Yes, yes. We are seldom here if ego is running the show, right?
Yeah.
And so it's like, wow, I recognize the programming. It's an old tape, and it gets overlaid on every situation.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I need to do is realize, A, that there is programming. B, the program has a survival strategy called resistance, which is to make sure that I never get out of it, do anything that will interrupt it, and therefore I sign up for the very things that, and do the very things that assist me to interrupt the program.
So it really does feel like there's something dying in there.
There is something dying in there.
So powerful. It's just, wow. It's, I love awareness. It's amazing.
It really is.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I'm so happy and excited to have talked to you twice today.
Me too.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
So happy.
Thanks for joining us, Miriam. And Ashwina, it's great to be practicing presence and seeing all the ways that conditioning is trying to interfere with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to be excited about that process, right? Because it's like, okay, I'm doing this because I'm miserable, but I'm going to do it in a miserable way rather than I'm excited to be doing this. Yeah.
Yes, I know exactly what you mean. I know that experience. And I recall Sherry talking about it recently too, that, you know, if we approach it all with dread, you know, we're just practicing dread. And so we need to practice excitement and enthusiasm about seeing this conditioning.
Mm-hmm. And just as Miriam was demonstrating, when we see it, when we keep practicing, however challenging it is, however the resistance shows up, it's the shifts that happen in us that are the motivation to keep going, right? Because the shifts are tremendous. The transformation does happen.
Yes. We stick with it, and then I see it.
Mm-hmm. I see it, and then I see through it.
Yes. See it and see through it. And Ashwini, we're going to take a break here and hear from our recording and listening program, and then we'll come back and talk with more callers.
Excellent. Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome.
Recording and listening is one of the most powerful tools for ending suffering. RL is based on a radical idea that rather than being lost in a conversation and conditioned mind, we can live in a conversation about what's true, what's real, what's arising in life in the moment. With recording and listening, we develop the powerful skill of directing the attention, enabling us to access the wisdom, love, and compassion that is our authentic nature. We have a 6-week virtual class to train in this amazing tool and experience its benefits. Sangha who have taken this class are saying that learning to direct the attention opens up endless possibilities and so often provides clarity and hope. Others report that finding refuge in my own voice and strengthening the awareness of the mentor is both transformative and powerful. Now is a great time to sign up with a recording and listening trainer. This class is perfect for brand new folks and old timers alike. To sign up with an individual trainer, simply email rltrainer@livingcompassion.org. Please check the website for quarterly group classes as well. Experience the joy of presence with the support of recording and listening.
Welcome back to Open Air. And Ashwini, we've been talking about recording and listening, and there's an app for iPhone users. It's called Practice Recorder. It's great for recording and listening, and it's on sale in the App Store, the iPhone's App Store.
Wonderful. Thanks, Michael.
Sure. And we have another caller here. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi. Michael and Ashwini, it's Todd.
Hey, Todd.
Hey, Todd.
Hey. I got nothing. Oh, that's great.
Well, you're well prepared for this call, right, Todd?
I am. I love it. I love it. Improv kept dropping in because of this morning's show. One of the conversations, the guidance was, life is improv. And one of my favorite TV shows from the 80s or 90s was What's My Line? And it was an improv show.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Does that ring a bell? I don't know if you... Thank you for the correction.
Yeah.
Whose Line Is Anyway? And they're just given, you know, like a place and a... Mm-hmm. They're given like three little scenarios. And then, it's just... I love the spontaneity of not knowing what's going to happen next, which really is life, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
Which is sort of what we have... what just happened, right, Todd? That there's a way in which you got nothing. And that's all right? There's a silence, there's a shift, there's a movement, there's a looking, and then life responds. But silence is actually a fabulous response.
It is. Yeah. Because silence is the space that allows life to come in.
Mhm. Mhm. Yeah.
And conditioned mind is the constant noise.
Right. Yeah, it's like mind interrupt. Right.
That's brilliantly stated. That's a conditioned mind interrupt is silence. Yeah, and it's interesting. You know, as practice goes along, and I've been doing it for a while, there's that cherishing silence and solitude.
Mhm.
I cherish it. I live in a place that is quite quiet. I live out of the city, in the country. And with COVID, there's very little human activity.
Mm-hmm.
Very few airplanes over top, very little transportation, which buses and, you know, tourists and stuff. I'm in kind of in a touristy area, but there's not much travel because we're kind of in lockdown still.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just really cherishing the silence. But now that it's spring, all the birds are coming back. The migratory birds and insects are migrating out. And and kind of nature's replacing, you know, humans' constant ability to make noise.
Mm-hmm.
Loving that.
Yeah, loving that movement from the silence and solitude that is natural. Right, to the silence and to the absence of what human beings create. And what was dropping in for me when you said that, Todd, right, that oftentimes when we say silence, it sounds like there's nothing there.
Mm.
And that's not true, right? Silence is not emptiness.
Oh.
It is emptiness with a capital E, but not. I mean, so...
Yeah.
As it's that moment of I got nothing is I turn to conditioned mind and I have nothing. But if as soon as I turn my attention, which you did, to what's here, there was always something. There's always something because life is so full, right?
Right.
I'm breathing. Yeah. I've got two legs. I can hear the birds. You know, there's water dropping off the ha-ha. And that's that's also when there's no chatter. That's ego chatter, we start to develop the receptivity to what's there in silence and solitude, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is life.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, and it's and to really there's just, you've talked a lot about it and practice talks a lot about it, and so does Sherry, is that the ability to be receptive to life, is it takes so much training and practice. But what I love about the structures is, like Reflective Listening Buddies, for example, is such a brilliant training in practicing presence. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's I aspire not to miss a quarter. I haven't for a while. For that very reason is I get to show up and practice presence. No greater gift, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's an example of silence in listening, right? Because there has to be such an absence of ego in order to be fully present to the other person.
Yes.
And so that same ability, that same process of being able to be fully present when you're in nature, there are no planes and trains and cars and automobiles and human chatter. That receptivity to the bird or to the insect, to the snowfall, to the, you know, to what the tree might be saying, to the movement of the wind. We start to be able to get so tuned into the subtlety of life.
Yes. Yeah, and just hearing that reflect back, calibration dropped in. Like, we calibrate because we're so uncalibrated when we're in conditioned mind, it feels like.
Yeah.
We're so uncalibrated to life, and practice allows us to calibrate to that receiving. And spring is such a I love all the seasons. I'm in a very fortunate place where we have, I think I've talked about this before, we have four solid seasons, almost three solid months of each season, and we're coming right out of winter. We're talking snow, cold winter, and we're going into spring. And crocuses are poking up, and the garden's starting to come alive. And like I said, the migratory birds are coming back. And this the beautiful transition of the leaves are starting to come on the trees, and it's like a rebirth after the dorm. And Sherry's talked about this, where things go to sleep over the winter, and everyone, you know, the bugs go, everything hibernates, all our big animals hibernate, our bears and stuff. So this spring is just this rebirth. It's a glorious time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Which related
to
practice is,
right.
When we practice, we're reborn out of conditioned mind into life in a way, too.
Mm-hmm.
We bring it to practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. On a moment-by-moment basis to whatever is there, right? So if it's the cold, dead silence of, cold, dead winter, it's one experience of energy.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's the light, bright
bird
song of spring, it's another experience of energy, right? But we're just
truly
there with what is.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Great. Well, thank you. Appreciate the opportunity to be on Open Air, and thanks for being, getting called
very
on.
Good. Whose line is it anyway? Improv.
We did. We just did some great improv. It was fun.
Great, thank you.
Thanks, Ashwini. Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Todd. And I love that reference to improv, Ashwini. And as we talk about that, life is improv. And when I'm open to the moment, then there's a lot of creativity and improv and, you know, being appropriate, which is fabulous.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the thing I love about that, Michael, is that when you suddenly get put on air, or you get on that stage or whatever it is, or someone asks you a question, and there's that screech which you realize the screeching halt where I got nothing, and then you turn your attention to life and you start to talk, and it's like the portal opens up. And so to be okay in those uncomfortable places, because a simple redirect of attention and the beginning of answering the question and looking lets the portal to life fall wide open, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's that intelligence that comes pouring forth with all of what it wants to say.
Yes, yes. It's great to have a practice that celebrates having nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yeah. as the gateway to everything.
Yes, as a gateway to everything. Wonderful. And we have another caller here. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi. Hi, it's Anna from Seattle.
Hi, Anna.
Hey, Anna.
Hi.
What are you looking at?
Oh, I'm just calling in. I think I'm like kind of struggling with depression right now.
You are what? I'm sorry, I didn't.
I think I'm like kind of having depression or something.
Uh-huh.
Right now.
Yeah, you're having you're feeling depressed.
Mhm. Yeah, or just maybe like a lot of things going on, and I don't want to call into the radio show and feel like this. But because I kind of like I hate like, you know, talking to a friend or something when I'm feeling like this, because I feel like it perpetuates it, and then I feel bad later, and then I'm that person that isn't, you know, that's feeling like unhappy and. But I'm calling in anyways.
Yes. Well, because, you know, you could do that. You could just talk about, you know, you could vent. That's one thing to do. But I project you're calling in for support. You're calling in for process support. Right?
Yeah.
Which is a very different thing than just, you know, griping or grumbling or talking about how unhappy you are. Which, as you said, tends to just reinforce the story. But you're calling to talk about the story as a way of disidentifying from the story, I project.
Yeah. Yes. So, yeah, I'm not even exactly sure what's going on, but I think, like, maybe physically it's, like, old. I mean, I don't know what's true about this, but old trauma, maybe, in the body.
Mhm. Mhm. So is it more at a sensation level? Is it an energetic experience?
Like physical, I think energetic, but then I'm also feeling really emotional.
Mhm. 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 Yeah. You're feeling emotional.
And
do you know what the emotion is about? I mean, do you have a sense of what the emotion is?
I think just about, so my dad, who isn't my biological dad, I found out like 3 years ago, but he has cancer all over the body now, and I have to go back to Germany.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And It's. I'm not even feeling that sad right now about it. It's more like that I don't really know how. It's basically that I don't remember any of my childhood.
Mm-hmm. It's making you remember that say that last part again. I'm not tracking.
Well, I'm just kind of curious. Feeling weird about that, I'm not even feeling very sad, and
mm-hmm.
and I don't know what happened in my childhood, and
mm-hmm. So it's complicated, right? It's not just a straight sense of sadness. It's just that here you've had some news about someone who you're close to, in some ways. Your father, who's been given a diagnosis of cancer, and that has stirred up something for you. You're not quite sure what that is, but you are in touch with the fact that it stirred it up, right? Because you're feeling emotional.
Yeah, and also like 1 month ago, I got an IUD, a copper IUD, and as soon as they put like the anesthesia on my cervix, I started sobbing, and I just had this physical response, like kind of uncontrollable crying. And mm-hmm. I want that thing out of me. But I'm not able to get an appointment, like, only in two mm-hmm. days. So I went to the ER today.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, they can't take it out because they didn't have anyone, like, there mm-hmm. trained to do mm-hmm. that or something. So, yeah, just mm-hmm. that thing in my cervix is also causing, mm-hmm. like, a lot of anxiety yeah. and...
Mhm. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot going on, right, Anna? And so there's someone there who it sounds like could use some support and some comfort and some reassurance.
Yeah.
But, yeah. 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 Are you hearing a lot of voices that you shouldn't feel this way?
No, I'm not hearing voices.
Mm-hmm. You're just feeling that way. There's the identification with that state of feeling anxiety and physical distress and not knowing what it's about.
I guess so.
Mm-hmm. Is it available to you, Anna, to basically pick up the recorder and start to explore that a little bit?
I think so.
Yeah, because we don't want to let her alone, be alone in that place, right?
And
just not from a perspective of fixing anything or figuring out what's wrong and taking care of it or any of those things, but just, you know, I'm feeling emotional, I'm feeling anxious for her to say those things and for her to be heard and for someone to reflect that, yeah, it's hard and I'm here for you.
Yeah.
Because it's true, there is stuff going on in her life, right? That she doesn't know how to process.
Yeah, I think it is like old trauma in my body, mm-hmm. like body memory mm-hmm. coming mm-hmm. up. Mm-hmm. So I'm not even feeling sad, really, or anything. It's just mm-hmm. like physical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, you don't cry only when you're sad. I remember one of the Zen teachers that says that, you know, tears dissolve ego. So if you're letting go of some deep identification or any of those things too, there doesn't have to be a reason for you to be emotional. We could just be emotional.
Yeah.
Because that's also a way, just like when we say we're depressed, and what depression is basically is energy being suppressed by conditioned mind, right? There's a way in which our life force is being managed. Our emotions are also coded conditioned mind, right? Stories in conditioned mind. And so when that gets triggered for us, we feel emotional.
Yeah.
And what we know as practitioners is that we can be in acceptance around that and bring conscious awareness to anything.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, thank you for calling, because I project that somebody reached out for support, and here we go.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good job. Good job. There's somebody looking out for Anna. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Anna.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Anna. And Ashwini, I heard a lot of kindness and compassion in that conversation, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. it's just so valuable.
Mhm. Yeah. Yeah. We all need it so desperately.
We all need it, yes. And I think we have time for one more caller here.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hello. This is Pasha calling from San Francisco.
Hey, Pasha.
Hi. So happy to be on the air and connect with Sangha. And it's such a support. And I'm here, present and available, and feel connected.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. It's good to have a Sangha and good to have ways to stay connected to that Sangha.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And what recently came up for me was practice of recording and listening is kind of gets over the years I've collected so many recordings that now it's you know, there are a few things. Like one is there is no issues that are not that don't have a recording about them.
You've gotten all your karma is captured in a recording somewhere. Mm-hmm.
Yes, several times. On the multiple levels and layers and one time what dropped in is like, wow, that's it. There is nothing more. It's a joy of knowing, you know, this is what I hold in my hand. That's it. You know, this is what I'm working with, and this is not what conditioning is trying to picture. Is like impossible task that unsurmountable. You know. Difficulty. That's everything conditioning got.
Yeah. So if I'm tracking that right, Pasha, there's this realization when you look at all of these recordings with all these layers of karma. At some level, this is what conditioning is. I mean, the from conditioning's from the ego perspective, all of what you have to overcome is so huge that it's practically insurmountable. But to recognize that. Yeah, there's flavors of content, and the content might change, but in essence, you really know what you're up against.
Yes. And mentor didn't miss a step. It had responses to all, you know, and support and reassurances and, you know, guidance for every step of the way. So that's also, you know, comforting to know that I am adequate to everything, to all that karma.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Well, and what I hear you say, right, Pasha, is the recognition that the process is known, right? And that's what gives us a sense of comfort. I can identify conditioning because no matter... Even if it invents a new flavor of some karmic process, I could recognize it for what it is. It's the process of suffering. And there's a process of awareness of kindness and encouragement and love and wisdom and compassion that also exists that is more than a match for that conditioning. So there's a way in which the mystery, within quotes, of how to end suffering is solved. For, right now it's just application because the process is known to you and you're so familiar with the process that you know that in a situation where you're suffering you can turn your attention and find wisdom, love and compassion. It's always going to be there and it'll be perfect for the situation that's arising.
Yes. And And what's happening now is I feel like those recordings get recorded somewhere inside. When I was recently in bed and could have used the recording, you know, then by just kind of redirecting my attention to what would I say to Pasha, you know, can I say something kind? And then boom, those recordings, they just come up and flow as they're there somewhere. And they're available, and they're not only recorded; they get recorded somewhere inside. Yes, that's what.
Well, and that's a miracle, right? That's a miracle. You keep listening to it, and then it's in your awareness, and you kind of forget, right, where it came from in the first place with you. You can just turn back to it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the benefit of the of practice, right? Because it's where something didn't exist, it didn't exist, you didn't attend to it, now you've attended to it, now it's in existence in your very being.
Yes. And what's happening with external child is also when he has some difficult situation and I don't know how to handle, those recordings come for me and they calm me down, and I feel I project it also helps the external child as he sees more maybe calmer parents or also, you know, I can say those kind words to him, and and we have this you know, we practice reflective listening, so, and sometimes he asks, "Oh, Papa, can we do reflective listening?"
How wonderful!
So charming!
Yes, yes.
To see the child is knows how to process.
It's the best gift that we could give our kids, right? Is to allow conscious, compassionate awareness to mentor us. And so conscious, compassionate, it's that process, right? In that moment, you have the choice of going to conditioned mind and making something up or reacting from conditioned mind. But instead, because of your recordings and the attention turning to the mentor, it's the wisdom, love, and compassion that becomes available for you and therefore through you to whoever you're interacting with.
Yes. Yes. And sometimes when I'm identified and I just turn my attention to what is it, you know, where's the kindness? What's really here? I'm not yet fully disidentified yet, but it already starts the playback of, you know, let's just go through the list of things I'm grateful for. And as I'm going through that list, I feel like, oh, I'm still not yet fully disidentified. And I cannot see the whole picture, but I'm making one little step at a time, and I see myself as if walking through through the maze that I know how to get out of. I don't know how to explain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yeah, yeah. There is awareness, right? There's awareness. That's what we're talking about. There's an expanding awareness process that's happening for you through your recording and listening practice, because what's happening is all of awareness is becoming available, right? So whether you're interacting with a child or whether you get identified in a particular circumstance, there's plenty of awareness to say, hey, here's the identification. Now we're in awareness. And then going through whatever it is that the recording might say to you, kindness or compassion or whatever else, there's that movement from a collapsed state of awareness, which is identification, to a much more expanded place where you're fully disidentified. And having having awareness of the movement, right?
Yes, yes. That's what an amazing thing before. It was like the magic happened. But now I see magic happens in front of my eyes.
Yeah. It's that shift from content to process, right? It's not like you're not just seeing the magic show. You're seeing the magician and the way the magic trick is being performed, and the magic just expands.
Yes, and also I see conditioning is screaming that I should have been somewhere else, and I should have feel already as I'm at the end, or there is some kind of a standard how I should be on top of the hill in the monastery. But I am where I am, and yes, I'm not there yet. But I agree with conditions, screaming, but I'm not going to do anything about it or what I'm just going with one step at a time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and it's a very interesting thing that you're talking about, right, Pasha, which is, when we pay this close attention to our process, we can see that I'm identified, then I become aware that I'm identified, which basically means attention moved to awareness, right? Because if I don't have awareness, I don't know that I'm identified. And because we're also aware of what the conditioned process is doing, attention is shifting, right? Attention shifting to conditioned mind, and then is shifting to awareness. And so and because the awareness is expanding and it's all happening in awareness, you can say something like, oh, well, I'm not there yet.
Yes. It's
right?
Like,
which doesn't mean that you don't have awareness. It just means that you're watching where the attention is going. And
yes,
at some point, you're far enough away from attending to conditioning that you feel like you've disidentified completely.
That's always tricky. Am I completely disidentified right now?
Exactly.
Am I completely disidentified right now?
It's a question. Yes, it depends on who answers the question, right? Precisely. Which brings us right here, right?
Yes. And also, what I saw is doesn't matter how I feel. I'm not feeling right now as I maybe should be feeling, in quotes, but that doesn't matter. There is still one leg after another, I'm making a step. And the process of seeing conditioning reminds me, when you stand on the platform of the train and you're about to step into a train, there is a sign, mind the gap. So it's like minding that gap, I don't want to put my feet into this, between the train and the platform, but I'm not standing there panicking and being afraid of the gap. It's just I'm aware and mindful of the gap, and I need to step over it to move on.
Yes. And, Pasha, talking about mindfulness, we're way over time, and I just noticed that.
Oh, yes.
So I think we'll find ourselves in the space between the thought and paying attention. And catch up on this later. Thank you so much,
I'm
Pasha.
Very grateful. Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks for joining us, Pasha. And thank you, Ashwini, for joining us tonight. And thanks to Sangha. And it's a great show. And go happy.
Go happy.